God has really blessed me. You know, he let me work in D.C., let me work with EIB in Hollywood, in Silicon Valley. And he's shown me through all those experiences that there is one problem and one solution, and that's why we do this show.
Welcome to A Disciple's View with Todd Herman.
When the God of the universe created the world, he didn't snap his fingers or wink his eye. The Lord spoke. He said, let there be light. Because we believe, we speak about the happenings in this world as we remain mindful that our true home is with Jesus Christ in his kingdom. Welcome to A Disciple's View. I'm Todd Herman. The Supreme Court is not a body I count on for reasonable decisions. I count on them to time their decisions. I believe the Roberts Court balances the decisions they make on a political scale. And I don't mean on a conservative political scale. I don't mean on a constructionist political scale. I think they are going through the process of giving each side a little bit of what they want to see as justice. I think that Roberts is a good man. I think he, at heart, wants to serve the country. I think he's compromised. I think the pattern would show that John Roberts is, well, compromised by, I think, pharma. That's just guessing. It's observing patterns. I don't want to bear false witness against the man. I'm just observing patterns. I look at a Supreme Court that has made this decision about President Trump. Well, no, really not about President Trump, about presidents and prosecutorial immunity. And I look at the decision that 6-3, and it makes eminent sense. And I'll get to that in a second. That just came down last few days. I would point out that this Roberts Court told us, the nation, that they are not able to decide on the constitutionality of the federal government using private companies to censor Americans. They said that the states that brought that case didn't have standing. That is utter, complete, ridiculous, laughable hogwash. It's hogwash. When states have conflicts with the federal government, there is only one body who can look at that from a constitutional perspective. That is this court. They punted on that case and said that there was no standing. Then, the very next week, the Supreme Court ruled that cities can prevent people from sleeping on sidewalks. Apparently, they're standing there. A city has an issue. They're sued by the ACLU. And that goes to the Supreme Court. And the Roberts Court says, yes, we can intervene in the case of people sleeping on sidewalks and the constitutionality of cities banning that. And in that case, they said cities can ban it. But we, the highest court in the land, one of three constitutionally provisioned bodies in our checks and balances system of the tricameral branches of government, we, the only ones with the authority to decide on the finality of something being constitutional or not, have found that there's no standing for any states, well, in these cases, to sue the federal government for censoring Americans. It's a joke. And John Roberts and the people who wrote that decision should be utterly embarrassed and red-faced, ashamed. Then we turn around, and the Roberts Court gives us this decision, which, of course, I think makes constitutional sense. I reluctantly accept this in the Constitution. I do think presidents should be subject to criminal law, and they are if they're acting outside of their official capacity. This case, in my judgment, never should have been brought because it's a lie wrapped up in a deception. This is the case of President Trump supposedly fomenting a revolution, or pardon me, an insurrection. Jack Smith is an illegally appointed special prosecutor, never appointed by Congress. That position was never funded by Congress. And yet here he is, a special prosecutor. Why? Because Merrick Garland, acting outside of constitutional realms, simply decided, hey, we'll have a special prosecutor. Did he go through congressional review? No. Was it funded that way? No. Can the DOJ just fund its own positions? No, not this way, not at that level. Jack Smith is pretending to be bringing a case against President Trump, charging with an insurrection, and yet Jack Smith has never charged him with an insurrection. He wants to charge him with everything surrounding that because he knows in the case of charging with an insurrection, there would be discovery. And President Trump's team would get to look at what Nancy Pelosi and her dear, dear friend Mitch McConnell did and didn't do around the events of January 6th. And of course, as I'm speaking, Steve Bannon is headed to prison or already there because he defied a subpoena from a January 6th committee that never should have existed and that has hidden evidence, has destroyed evidence, criminal from the start. So my frustration with the Supreme Court and the Roberts Court is I think that they want to give this side a little bit and this side a little bit. And I'm just guessing that it is Roberts' opinion that by doing that, he can help forestall the collapse of the country. This is the correct decision. Constitutionally, it's not at all unclear what the founders designed. This is the majority decision in whether or not President Trump has prosecutorial immunity, or this is rather part of that decision. We conclude that under our constitutional structure of separated powers, the nature of presidential power requires that a former president have some immunity from criminal prosecution for official acts during his tenure in office, at least with respects to the president's exercise of his core constitutional duties. Core constitutional duties. Well, that's an interesting way to put it. And while he's in office, this tenure, I think that's obviously something designed within the Constitution. And back to the decision quoting them, at least with respect to the president's exercise of his core constitutional powers, pardon me, not duties, powers, this immunity must be absolute. As for his remaining official actions, he's also entitled to immunity. At the current stage of proceedings in this case, however, we need not only do not decide, we need not and do not decide whether that immunity must be absolute or instead whether presumptive immunity is sufficient. It is these enduring principles that guide our decision in this case. The president enjoys no immunity for his unofficial acts, and not everything the president does is official. The president is not above the law. But Congress may not criminalize the president's conduct in carrying out the responsibilities of the executive branch under the Constitution. And the system of separated powers designed by the framers has always demanded an energetic, independent executive. The president, therefore, may not be prosecuted for exercising his core constitutional powers, and he's entitled, at a minimum, to presumptive immunity from prosecution for all his official acts. That immunity applies equally to all occupants of the Oval Office, regardless of politics, policy, or party. Well, as it should. Already leftists are saying that this means that the figurehead, Biden, could order Steve Bannon to be murdered in the prison showers. That's how he put it. He's a lawyer, by the way. So that would be a core constitutional power of figurehead Biden to order the murder of an American? Nope. It's not a core constitutional power. But of course, this is the desperate state of the left in regards to this decision. And they would love this decision in a heartbeat if it was the prosecutor who was going to prosecute figurehead Biden. The figurehead was asked about this.
I know I will respect the limits of the presidential powers I have for 3.5 years. Thank you. And may God protect our troops.
That is the figurehead doing the dementia shuffle, walking out the door. Now, I can't tell if that's the actual White House. It looks like the soundstage. Now, I'm just judging by the way the door is open. I'm looking at the sky. I'm looking at the image behind him. It looks like one of the sound stages that the figurehead's team has had set up, a fake White House for a figurehead president. Doesn't want to answer the questions about this. This is one of the many, many ways that the people who run Joe Biden have utterly beclowned our judicial system by bringing this case. Was it an official act when President Trump went and spoke about election fraud? Absolutely. The chief executive of the country believes an election was stolen. It is his constitutional and, in fact, moral duty to speak about that. Absolute moral, constitutional, and, fact, spiritual duty to speak about that. And, of course, the president told people to proceed peacefully. It continues to amaze me, the number of people who really did not understand how utterly, utterly mentally lost the figurehead Biden is. In a world that loves lies, and well, let's be clear, they love well-packaged, slick, beautiful, beautiful lies, angel of light stuff. Many people are stunned to see the real Joe Biden. And MSNBC is still mourning this loss of Biden. Well, actually, the revealing of Biden during this debate.
And that slack-jawed face that was basically frozen in place every time Donald Trump spoke, I would say that's the place where I'm really wondering what happened at debate prep, because that was something he should have been really aware of and prepared for. That again, the mouth agape, people, they won't need cheap fake videos. They can actually use the videos from CNN.
They won't need cheap fakes. They need to bring that back, as if there were cheap fakes being used during this debate. See, in a world that loves lies, there's no world that loves it more than Washington, D.C., because as I've said many, many times, you can become the lie. If you refuse to heed the Holy Spirit, you refuse to follow the Spirit, you do everything you can to separate yourself from God, you can become closer to Satan than to God. Nancy Pelosi parades as a strict Catholic, a Christian. She's not. She's neither. She's not a strict Catholic by any stretch of the imagination. And I see nothing in her to indicate she's a Christian. Back in 2020, Nancy Pelosi and Jamie Raskin, both of them who questioned elections, both of them said Trump was an illegitimate president. They talked about a Congressional Commission on Presidential Mental Capacity.
So I hope you will prepare yourselves for a civics lesson, or a presentation on the Constitution of the United States. The 25th Amendment to the Constitution was ratified in 1967 after the assassination of President Kennedy, with strong bipartisan support. Members of Congress have a duty to take all necessary action to preserve continuity of government and protect the stability and integrity of our democracy for the future. That is why today, again, it is my honor to welcome Congressman Jamie Raskin of Maryland, a constitutional scholar.
A constitutional scholar, yes, very much a scholar. And the guy who says that this election was stolen, Trump stole it, and then a few years later, he announces that it's an act of domestic terrorism to question an election. One other thing about the Supreme Court, they made a decision on a paperwork violation that the corrupt Merrick Garland used to hold peaceful protesters in prison for a couple of years. This is the 1512 rule that was created around Enron. Free state will was held with these charges, along with others.
But a few hours ago, the Supreme Court ruled that Biden's Department of Justice has wrongly prosecuted hundreds of Americans for peacefully protesting on January 6th. Those people have been treated so badly.
Those people, like Free State Will, who wrote, so many Jan 6 defendants, including me, were wrongly prosecuted with a bogus 20-year felony. Those who weaponize government must be held accountable, and there must be restitution to the victims. I couldn't agree more. There were people held in prison or charged with going to prison who ended up killing themselves. Many pled guilty to avoid the process of being bankrupted. And this law, this rule, 1512 2C, should have never been used. It literally meant tearing up papers, destroying evidence. But that's how it was used. At least the Supreme Court did look at justice in this case. We'll come back on The Disciple's View. Appreciate you listening to Disciples View. I'm Todd Herman. One of my favorite authors of secular works, and I just will stress again, I don't think there's any such thing as secular. God controls everything. He made everything. He owns everything. It's all his. Everything we produce. But secular-themed books, there's a guy named William Gibson. My favorite work of his is a book called Pattern Recognition, and it's a clean book. There's no actual sexual contact in it, and there's limited violence. It's a science fiction-ish detective piece with a whole bunch of pop culture in it. It's a fascinating story for where it leads. What happens, and I don't want to give a lot away because my hope is one day you might read the book, Pattern Recognition. But where it leads is the discovery of artwork being created by people who shouldn't be able to create it. That's ultimately where it leads. Two sisters who shouldn't be able to create what they're creating, but God has especially gifted them to do this by limiting anything else they could possibly do. That's as much of the plot as I want to give away. I bring that up because there is a quote by a famous, or some would say infamous, investor, Larry Summers, I want you to hear. And it has to do with professions that kids, young people should choose. Remember when it was all about coding, that was the skill? He's suggesting something different, which is why I was reminded of the William Gibson book and that titular scene in it, where the main character discovers who is creating this incredible bit of film. She keeps seeing these films, these little bits of film, and she's employed by an ad agency to go find the creator of these films. And so she comes upon these two sisters. And I listened to Summers speak about these careers that kids should choose, saying it should be in the field of art. And I'll let him explain why. But before you hear from Larry Summers, there is this. This is from Ava Technologies, AIVA. It's a song, I guess, if you want to call it a song, created by AI. AI-generated rock music, and they call it On the Edge. So they simply put in parameters, told it what they wanted to create, and it has no lyrics in it. I guess, thank goodness. But this is what the computer thought would be AI-generated rock. And as you listen to this, yeah, there's notes. There's rhythm. And it's going to go up in, not complexity, but musical texture as they continue to add instrumentation to it. And little bits of melody. Do you hear any soul in this? Do you hear any joy in that? We as human beings are given great gifts of creativity, great gifts of, well, creation. So I hear the melody theme being changed around, melodic theme being changed around a little bit, some new parts introduced, and the song grows, I guess. It's still the same theme. We as human beings are given great abilities to be creative. Some people are more creative than others. Some people are numbers people. Back in the day, there was a time where everybody was supposed to learn to code. This is still the case in many schools. All students need to take STEM. Everybody needs to be focusing on math, engineering, coding. It's not what Larry Summers says. Now, I don't think Larry Summers knows the Lord. I don't see anything in his history to indicate he knows the Lord. But this is what he said about careers for young people. And to me, it goes to the heart of who God is.
So studying coding, bad idea. Studying how to work in a group on an act of creation and defining purpose, I think that's going to be hugely important. I think the one sentence line would be AI is going to come for IQ before it comes for EQ.
So AI is going to come for intelligence, to mimic human intelligence before it can mimic human emotion. Well, part of this is obvious. Larry Summers, you are never going to create emotion. All the tech prowess in the world will never create emotion. And that's a short bit of his statement. And it's a long piece. It's about 5 minutes long, so we won't play it on the radio. But he specifically mentions the creation of art. Now, if AI is to create art like this song, it's going to be several steps removed from the inspiration that God gives us in our hearts. I had a discussion the other day with a friend over lunch, and we were talking about some stuff I've been writing. And I just shared it with her and her family and asked them to look at it. And she and I were talking over it. And she said, "You're a great writer." And I paused and I thought about that. And I said, "Thank you." And then I said, "When I'm properly inspired, I can effectively write, thank God." Now, her husband concurs. He liked the piece. He's not as emotional as she. So he said, "I liked it. It caught my attention. It's a good review." I mention this because, like speech, art is an extension of our connection to God. See, I do agree that AI is going to come for the IQs. It already is. AI is already writing code. I remember speaking at Google years ago. Well, not at Google, but at an event that Google sponsored in Silicon Valley. And I said that, you know, when artificial intelligence finally gets here, you do understand that you are, as you're writing this code, as you're creating AI, you're creating the devices that will steal your jobs first, right? You are training the very devices that are going to steal your jobs. And we were talking about YouTube and the application of metadata to videos and to make these video libraries searchable. This is one of the big, big acts that people didn't get about YouTube is when people went in and described videos and they uploaded them and they provided descriptions of what was in the videos, they were training a machine to be able to watch video and determine what's in it ahead of time. Because one of the big problems with video libraries is all these archives were unsearchable. They're not unsearchable anymore. I remember saying on this panel, as you create these things, you are creating the very machines, the very software that will come along and steal your jobs, and you'll have hardware that makes hardware and software that makes software. Someone on the panel said, "Well, you are a big fan of content creation. You come from a content background, not a technical background. And I think AI is going to get to content first, far before it gets to creating any form of complex code." This was the discussion. I said, "Oh, it's going to create content. Sure, it can do that, but it cannot mimic inspiration. It cannot." This, to me, explains a great bit of connection to God. I'm a big fan of the phrase signature in the cell. It comes from my favorite book about intelligent design. And signature in the cell contends that God has signed his work in our DNA, but God has signed his work in so many other ways. He has signed his work in the music we enjoy. In the West, there is the 4-4 rhythm is mostly what people enjoy. The 1-4-5 chord structure is what people mostly enjoy, with a minor minor fifth or sixth. Minor sixth. When they play these songs and they're AI driven, they know these things. They know about the 4-4 beats. They know about the melodic constraints. They know about the 1-4-5 chord structures. They know about having the minors in the right places, or maybe even a minor seventh, or maybe even something that's an augmented chord to create a little bit of discord like the Beatles used to use. They know all these things, but what they do not know is having received absolute inspiration to the point where you don't want to write anything else, to create anything else but what just inspired you. These are the moments of great art. This is what happens in great art that is born this way, that is the human soul bursting with something it wants to say. It can be writing a screenplay. It can be writing a story. It can be writing a song. It can be creating a painting. But if you speak to great artists, there's these moments of inspiration that come to them and they dive into the work. AI cannot do this. Praise God. To young people looking at careers, I'm not saying that everyone should be an artist. It's a tough road. I was talking to my daughter about this. She's in art school in college, and she's killing it. And she said, yeah, I'm very, very concerned about this, Dad, because my professor does not earn good money. My professor lives in a two-bedroom apartment, a basement apartment, with his wife. And his wife is in a similarly lower-paying task, work, or pardon me, career. And I said to her, okay, is he happy? And she said, well, I don't know. I said, well, wait. You see him on a daily basis. Is he happy? She goes, he laughs a lot. Is he happy? He really likes it when we do well within our work. What's he teaching you? Well, he's teaching us how to make art. What's he teaching you? What's the core? He's teaching you something he loves. He's imparting it to you. Is your goal to go make money? Is that your goal? Well, no. My goal is to make great art. Why? Because they don't think there's enough beautiful things in the world. Neither do I. Not man-made. God has created beauty all about us. He's created beauty in conversations with friends. He's created beauty where people share something surprising about themselves. He's created beauty in the perfection of holding your little infant the first time you see your little infant, in the little face that they make at you, and they'll make again and again and again, even as they grow. He's created that beauty. He's created the beauty in our minds that accept the sounds of great music, that accept the visions of great art. But the creativity in the human mind has been stomped out by the focus on STEM and math and being, well, let's say this, worker bees. Everybody needs a task. I don't think there's anything wrong with worker bee positions. I think there are people who are happy in that. My producer of my podcast, Nayana, is made comfortable by repetitive tasks. The more repetitive, the better for her. And she'll say, I love it. I know exactly what I'm going to do. I do the same thing every day. I feel very safe this way, and I feel very, very put together and like I am competent. For me, that stuff makes me want to claw my eyes out. God gifts us all differently. If you have a child bursting with creativity or a grandchild bursting with creativity, there's one thing I would suggest. Talking about the bridge to God, and here's what I mean. I began this talking about William Gibson and his work, Pattern Recognition. I began this by talking about Gibson's world, where two young women who shouldn't create art are changing the world of art as their little films are found all around the world, being distributed bit by bit by bit. I want to connect these two things. William Gibson's book, Pattern Recognition, is about found art. Accidentally found, and the world now seeking it and seeking the creator of it, being found bit by bit. If you have kids or grandkids or you yourself are driven to creativity, I would ask you to pick up Genesis. I would ask you to pick it up and read it from a new perspective. God, who has always existed and always will exist in a loving triune relationship with Jesus and the Holy Spirit always and forever, said, light be, and there was light. It's often described that God now painted on a canvas. He did, with not just unspeakable levels of intelligence, but an unspeakable level of inspiration. I will make them in my image. Male and female, I will make them. Speaking of us. That moment, that inspiration, it is another bridgeway to God. Our words, our mind, our conscience is a bridgeway to God. in my judgment. In your life, the young people who surround you, or you yourself in these creative careers or creative pursuits, or maybe your heart beats to create art, but you've not done it. Next time you sit down to write or to draw or to paint or to create music, I wonder, could you give a prayer to the Lord that it would be His inspiration that you channel? That a prayer of thanks for even the desire to create or to steward, to guide, to put on paper or on film or in audio, that which He put in your mind and your soul. Yes, I agree with Larry Summers. AI will come for IQ first. It's already doing it. It can mimic facts, repeat them, use math, but AI can never wake up in the morning wanting so very much to share beauty with the world, even if it's not beauty the person fully yet understands. It's still being formed. It's just the germ of an idea, maybe a film, maybe a book, maybe a painting, maybe a lovingly crafted letter to a friend. We'll come back with the Tower Babbling. I'm Todd Herman. This is The Disciples' View. Thank you for listening to Disciples View. I'm Todd Herman. The last segment. Sometimes God fills me with things that are so clear and so ordered. And in the last segment, talking about art and its extension of our conscience, and our conscience is a bridgeway to God, I hope that didn't come off as wandering. It was only till the end of this that I really began to understand what God was telling me. What God was telling me was, yes, I let you create things artistically because I myself have created the greatest art that could ever be, and that's you. That's what that boils down to. So if you missed that last segment, you can get all these shows, AFR.net, monthly donors get access to all the shows in perpetuity. And it's a really, really good setup. It's at AFR.net, and I'm so thankful for the leadership team deciding to do that here. We'll get into the Tower Babbling here in just a second. Just a couple of things, because I think it's really important for us to look at good news. Courtesy of Jack Posobiec, who is a very successful podcaster, works at Human Events, young guy, super energetic, very smart man. He got leaked. Someone leaked him some information that a company called Tractor Supply, which serves a very conservative, very Christian base of people, farmers. Tractor Supply had embedded diversity, exclusion, and insanity, or actually distraction, exclusion, and insanity, DEI. That is teaching racism and grievance culture and coveting as part of their corporate culture that had embedded there by, in fact, their CEO. And some of their executives, as Posobiec explained, and he got documents leaked to him that they were doing this, and videos leaked to him, corporate videos. Some of them now made public of, we're talking about women's rights and et cetera. And yes, we Americans have rights. Thank God for the Constitution, literally in the Bill of Rights. Thank God for that. Well, once this got found out, the people who buy things from Tractor Supply revolted. Just like that, the Americans did with Bud Light and Target. Bud Light has never recovered. God willing, they never will. Now, if they came out and apologized for pretending that a man is a woman and apologized for helping to drive the madness of gender ideology into the country, then I could turn around and say, okay, let's give them a second chance. But they've never done that. Tractor Supply did. after losing $2 billion. And the reason I like this is it's not revenge. This is not revenge. This is people making decisions with their money and not backing things they cannot back. Tractor Supply on June 27, 2024, sent out what amounts to an apology. We work hard to live up to our mission and values every day and represent the values of the communities we serve. We've heard from our communities that we have disappointed them. We've taken this feedback to heart, and they go through some of the steps they're taking. Going forward, we will ensure activities and giving tie directly to our business. For instance, this means we will no longer submit data to the Human Rights Campaign. What is that? That is a San Francisco-based group of run by at least two actual pedophiles who have been the driving force in transing kids, and they're a pressure group, very, very evil group. Number two, we focus our team engagement groups on mentoring, networking, and supporting the business. Further, number three, focus on rural American priorities, including agriculture, education, animal welfare, veteran causes, and being a good neighbor and sponsoring non-political activities. Nothing like pride festivals and voting campaigns. They're out of that business. Eliminate DEI roles and retire our current DEI goals while still ensuring a respectful environment at work. Withdraw our carbon emissions goals and focus on our land and water conservation efforts. Praise God that these guys met their consumers at a point where the consumers just said, we're making a decision. If you're going this way, we're going another way. It is time for conservatives and Christians. I'm not calling for some big, broad boycotting of general industries. But when companies make decisions like this, it's time for us to stand. I rarely buy clothes. I went and bought some summer clothes for camp. I'm going to the youth camp. And last year I was so hot and miserable. I bought some cooler clothes. And I happened to walk into Macy's because I had a huge, massive sale. And as I was checking out, I saw a group called the Trevor Project. And would you like to donate to the Trevor Project? And I had to stop and say, you guys don't know what you're doing. You really don't know the details of this group. I had to step out. It's something I couldn't participate in. The lady was so disappointed. These things would look so good on you. I can't buy them here. I'm sorry. It's time that we do this. There is good news. There's good news in that Gavin Newsom, who's being positioned as the guy to take the place of the figurehead, if the figurehead is either the 25th Amendment removes him or the Democrats find a way to get him out of the way. Gavin Newsom being touted as the replacement. So people have begun doing what they've done to Tractor Supply to Gavin Newsom. For instance, this is making a huge splash on social media, and it's a very, very old video of Gavin Newsom apologizing for getting caught having a sexual affair with his campaign manager's wife.
I want to make it clear that everything you've heard and read is true, and I am deeply sorry about that. I've hurt someone I care deeply about, Alex Turk, his friends and family. And that is something that I have to live with and something that I am deeply sorry for. I am also sorry that I've let the people of San Francisco down. They expect a lot of their mayor, and my personal lapse of judgment aside, I am committed to restoring their trust and confidence and will work very hard in the upcoming months to make sure that the business of running the city is framed appropriately.
The business of running San Francisco. Having made that apology then, he went all the way to the tip top of California as the dictator. And of course he wants to be president. Of course he does. I love the fact that the people who consumed that video have taken it now to Ford. No, he apologized well. He might have even meant it. And then he turned around and allowed the teaching in schools of kids to make them into what? Sexually craven, racist pharma bots. Through Gavin Newsom, great, great evil is done. May God forgive him. We can all sometimes seek forgiveness. We all sometimes have to seek forgiveness. We all need redemption. Gavin Newsom may be more than most of us. On this program, we thank the Lord for placing the supposedly wise people on tall towers of shaking sand with our feature called The Tower Babbling.
You know about the biblical truth of the Tower of Babel. A Disciple's View presents...
Culture is a reflection of our moment and our time. And present culture is the way we express how we're feeling about the moment.
The Tower of Babbling.
Three sound bites in today's Tower Babbling. We'll try to get to this one tomorrow. I just saw this. Jake Tapper is scolding some of his colleagues and people in politics for pretending that no one witnessed any dementia in figurehead Biden during the debate. He's calling them Orwellian tactics. Jake, welcome to a tiny little glimpse of what it's been like confronting your network over the past 4 years. Safe and effective injections, safest, most secure election in history, and the right-wing plot to make it seem that Joe Biden is not all there. Welcome to getting a little bit of sampling of this, Jake. I honestly pray that God's using this to bring you back to some form of journalism. Not so with Joe Scarborough. I mean, I pray for Joe Scarborough. I don't. That's not true. I don't pray for him. I should. Joe Scarborough, three months ago, was talking about Joe Biden as if he was, well, rebirthed, energetically and intellectually rebirthed. So let's just do a comparison. Scarborough from 3 months ago versus Scarborough from this past week.
I think he's better than he's ever been. This is a battle for the future of American democracy. And now is a good time. In June, thank God. In June, and not October, in June. This is the last chance for Democrats to decide whether this man we've known and loved for a very long time is up to the task.
When you are so craven for holding on to the joys and the seduction of being famous, and that's what I think is the deal with Scarborough, you're willing to do or say anything to hold on to that. I know. I mean, I've never been famous at that level, but I can tell you what. I had the opportunity to experience power when I had Microsoft's paychecks or actually Microsoft's checkbook in Hollywood. I had the experience of experiencing power. I got to see what that was like. Man, it's a drug. So I understand why Scarborough would have trouble giving it up. But how do you maintain any trust in yourself when you're willing to change like that within 90 days? Scarborough knew about where Biden was at mentally. Next soundbite in today's Tower Babbling. About a month ago, Jill Biden was on The View. And here's what Jill Biden was saying about President Donald Trump.
You need to see Trump and you need to see the president and you need to see the differences. And my husband's, and you're going to see how smart he is and the experience he has. And then you'll see somebody who, like you're saying, I'm going to use Joy's words, put a sentence together, right, because your choice is going to be clear.
President Trump, she said, could not put a sentence together. She said this months ago on The View. See, the degree to which they were willing to front lies about figurehead Biden shows the degree to which they also are invested in holding on to the power that they have. I'm haunted, truly haunted by that picture of babysitter Jill sitting on the lap of client Joe in his backyard while Joe was married. And God forgive me for asking the question. Was babysitter Jill seeking power at that point? I mean, it's happened before that young women attach themselves to older men to seek power. Would that be the case with Jill Biden? God knows. Oh, wait, let me stop. And again, underline, italicize, and bold what I just said. God knows. He knows our hearts too. He knows mine. And he knows yours. Last soundbite in today's Tower of Babbling. This is a judge in Harris County, Texas. And judges, county judges have huge powers. Very bizarre setup. But then again, it's, you know, Texas, and they get to do what Texas gets to do. And this woman was an absolute tyrant during the COVID lockdowns. And her name is Lena Hidalgo, Judge Lena Hidalgo. She was asked a question about the abuse of a 12-year-old girl, Jocelyn Nungery, who was, well, abused and then murdered at the hands, of course, of an illegal immigrant. Listen to Judge Lena Hidalgo absolutely not politicize this murder.
Biden and McConnell agree. It's just that Trump won't let him move it forward.
All due respect, Judge, you said this issue shouldn't be politicized, but by pointing the finger at former President Trump and Republicans in Congress, aren't you politicizing it?
I think I answered the question. So, this is about Jocelyn. This is about her family.
No, you yourself made it about President Trump and were caught staring blankly at television cameras, realizing what you'd done and continuing to front the lie that you didn't just do what we all just watched you to do. We watched it. I truly believe if Satan can distort, distract, and depress and tell lies and have them believed, I absolutely believe that Satan can make you into a walking and breathing lie. That's a wrap for today's Tower of Babbling.
That was the Tower of Babbling.
I don't have anything to share with all of you at this time, and I'll just leave it there.
On a Disciple's View.
I'm processing something in my mind, and I will tell you in this program, it's been percolating in the back of my mind, and I might have been distracted today. If I seem distracted, I want to seek your, well, forgiveness. And I will work to pray to get this to a point where I can communicate it to you. I don't know yet what it is. I just feel like God is telling me, yeah, I'm going to need you to say something. I'll tell you, because God will tell me. In the beginning was the Word was with God, and the Word was God. Until God decides you and I can speak again together, may His peace wash over you. On behalf of Randy and AFR, I'm Todd Herman. This has been A Disciple's View.